Men of Men, the Ballantine Series, Book 2, written by Wilbur Smith and read by Elliot Chapman.
It had never been exposed to the light of day, not once in the 200 million years since it assumed its present form, and yet it seemed in itself to be a drop of distilled sunlight. It had been conceived in the heat as vast as that of the sun's surface, in those unholy depths below the earth's crust, in the molten magma that welled up from the earth's very core. In those terrible temperatures, all impurity had been burned from it, leaving only the unadulterated carbon atoms, and under pressures that would have crushed mountains, these had been reduced in volume and packed to a density beyond that of any other substance in nature. This tiny bubble of liquid carbon had been carried up in the slow subterranean river of molten lava through one of the weak spots in the earth's crust, and it had almost, but not quite, reached the surface before the larval flow faltered and finally stopped. The lava cooled over the ensuing millennium, and it altered its form and became a mottled bluish rock composed of gravelly fragments loosely cemented in a solid matrix. This formation was naturally unassociated with the country rock which surrounded it and filled only a deep, circular well whose mouth was shaped like a funnel, almost a mile in diameter, and whose tail descended sheer into the uncounted depths of the earth. While the lava was cooling, the purged bubble of carbon was undergoing an even more marvelous transformation. It solidified into an eight-faced crystal of geometrical symmetry the size of a green fig, and so thoroughly had it been purged of impurity in the hellish furnace of the earth's core that it was transparent and clear as the sun's own rays. So fierce and constant had been the pressures to which the single crystal had been subjected, and so evenly had it cooled, that there was no cracking or shearing within its body. It was perfect, a thing of cold fire so white that it would appear electric blue in good light, but that fire had never been awakened, for it had been trapped in total darkness across the ages, and no single glimmer of light had ever probed its lucid depths. Yet for all those millions of years the sunlight had been no great distance away, a matter of only 200 feet or less, a thin skin of earth when compared to the immense depths from whence its journey to the surface had begun. Now, in the last wink of time, a mere few years out of all those millions, the intervening ground had steadily been chipped and whittled and hacked away by the puny, inefficient but persistent efforts of an ant-like colony of living creatures. The forebears of these creatures had not even existed upon this earth when the single pure crystal achieved its present form. But now, with each day, the disturbance caused by their metal tools set up faint vibrations within the rock that had been dormant so long. And each day those vibrations were stronger, as the layer between it and the surface shrank from 200 feet to 100 and then to 50, from 10 feet to 2, until now only inches separated the crystal from the brilliant sunlight which would at last bring to life its slumbering fires. Major Morris Zuger Ballantyne stood on the lip of the aerial ropeway high above the deep circular chasm where once a small hillock had risen above the flat and dreary landscape of the African continental shield. Even in the fierce heat he wore a silk scarf at his throat, the tail of which was tucked into the button front of his flannel shirt. Though recently washed and pressed with a heated stroking iron, his shirt was indelibly stained to a dull, reddish ochre colour. It was the pigment of the African earth, red earth, almost like raw meat, where the iron-shod wheels of the wagons had cut it or the shovels of the diggers had turned the surface, earth that rose in dense red dust clouds when the hot, dry winds scoured it, or turned to bleeding, glutinous red mud when the thunderstorms thrashed its surface. Red was the colour of the diggings. It stained the hair of dogs and beasts of burden. It stained the clothing of the men and their beards and the skin of their arms. It stained their canvas tents and coated the corrugated iron shanties of the settlement. Only in the gaping hole below where Zuga stood was the colour altered to the soft yellow of a thrush's breast. The hole was almost a mile across, the rim of it nearly a perfect circle, and its bottom already 200 feet deep in places. The men working down there were tiny insect figures, spiders perhaps, for only spiders could have spun the vast web that glittered in a silvery cloud over the entire excavation.